Welcome to the Life V Lifestyle Podcast. My name is Donald, and I am your host. And the title of today's episode is, well, I forgot about that, so I will figure that out later. But outside of that, I have another special guest on the show. This gentleman is, I mean, truly one of the most down-to-earth people I have ever met. Just an awesome guy. You know, he is a mentor, a friend, and is a wealth of knowledge on so many levels and really an inspiration in his own right. And so with that, actually, I'd like to virtually welcome Mr. Hugh Hunter to the show. Welcome to the show, Hugh.
I appreciate it, man. I feel like we need one of those like audience like applause tracks just to run on in the back from like those 90 TV shows.
Yo, that would be so cool. You know, I'm gonna look into that now. No, I'm looking into that.
But yeah, I'm really happy to be here. It's always great to connect with you and to have remained connected even after we weren't at the same institution. See all the great things you're doing. And to be able to talk about like life and work and how those two intersect, it's one of my favorite things. So thank you for having me.
No, thank you, man. And kind of like speaking of, you know, our time of knowing each other and just kind of thinking back. So before we get started, I actually want to know if you could give us a quick elevator pitch on who you are.
Oh wow. Yeah. This is full circle, really. Okay. So my name is Hugh Hunter. I was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. I graduated from Emory University with my undergrad degree, and then I did graduate studies at Wake Forest University. I was kind of toggling back and forth with what my career options would be. I felt like I had some variety in my skills, but I wasn't quite sure how I wanted to use that variety. I always had a passion for writing. And with my business degree from grad school, I went ahead and jumped into corporate marketing. I was there for a couple of years, but I really didn't enjoy the environment. And so I thought about how I could use my corporate experience to give back to other people. And that looked like working in student affairs in higher education. So I got my first higher ed job at a small private university in Georgia, which is where I met Donald. I was a career coach there for a number of years, matriculated through a few different positions and different levels of responsibility. And then I actually, you know, ended that career at Arizona State University in a similar capacity, but working more with employers. And so I left the workforce in 2019, and I've been running my own career coaching business since then, in addition to doing some other writing, business writing, creative writing endeavors, and all of that is keeping me afloat. But yeah, that's pretty much my story.
Perfect. Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, you kind of mentioned that he started his own business and everything, and that he went into writing. So you have the Southern District. Is that correct? That's like where you do your books and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Gotcha. That is the like catch-all brand for pretty much all of the work that I do.
Perfect. Perfect. And then your like professional resumes and all the coaching, career coaching and stuff. That is, remind me of the name of it again.
Yeah, it's called Not Your Average Resume, Professional Resume Writing, and we call it NYA for short. So yeah, NYA Resume is my like career coaching brand.
Gotcha, perfect. So everybody listening, this man does it all. You can check him out on LinkedIn, you know. I know you're going to like what you hear. So yeah, you can find him on LinkedIn, Hugh Hunter, awesome guy. Awesome guy. But without further ado, I am going to kind of jump into what we're going to talk about today. And if anybody was wondering, though, while we were talking about full circle and everything, it is because, what was it? I mean, that was like my freshman year of college, maybe my sophomore year. But we worked together on an event, a professional event for my business fraternity. And we created an event talking about elevator pitches, kind of teaching people how to do everything. So I thought that would be a cool way for us to start off this episode and everything, just to
I
touch
love it.
on. But yeah, so for everyone listening, Hugh and I go back. And right now we are both kind of into life and career and kind of figuring out the philosophy behind them and what works for us. And so I'm super excited to kind of finally have Hugh on the show and talking about this topic because he's so good at it. And so I think this is really going to be interesting and insightful for myself and hopefully for you all that listen to this episode. And so with that being said, my first question to you, Hugh, is when we were first talking, and when we were talking on LinkedIn and everything, you said that for your philosophy, career isn't necessarily about achieving, it's about growing. Could you delve into that a little bit for me?
Absolutely. So I think that there are a lot of things that influence how we are conditioned to think about what our careers are and what work means. Here in America, obviously we have a capitalist society, and with that, I think the stage is set from the very beginning to say, how can we create work for ourselves that benefits us the most? And usually the way that people think about benefits is material gain. So like, how can I find a job that's gonna give me the most that I can then use to do whatever, right? To create like a better quality of life for myself or to enjoy things that I like enjoying. And so people often base their career aspirations on how much they can achieve and at what levels they can reach in their field, so that they can, sort of hit that overall attainment of quote good job unquote with all of the, sort of dressings that come with having a good job. And I'm not here to say that people shouldn't look for gainful employment or they shouldn't want to progress in their field. I think all of those things are good. I think that it pays to understand the distinction between moving through a career with different titles and reaching different levels, so to speak, and then moving through a career where you as a person are benefiting in such that you're gaining different skills, you're gaining perspective, you're figuring out what you like, what you don't like, and what you're good at. And then you're able to use that to continue to propel yourself, right? So you may be in a job that you're not really digging, but you're getting paid a lot and you're moving through all the levels and you're wondering why you feel unfulfilled. And it's because that the way in that job is giving back to you is not the way that's the most helpful for you. And I know folks who maybe have been in the same position for a while, but they get to do a lot of different projects at work, or they get to learn a bunch of different things on the company dime. And so that puts them in a place where internal growth and knowledge and development is such that they feel fulfilled and they can actually use those skills to do other things that they have been aspiring to do in life. So I try to encourage people not to look at the career journey as like a linear path, and to look at it more of almost like a little circle. And where are you starting? What things do you want to pick up on your journey back to centering yourself, right? Like at the end of your career journey, you should be ending with you. Like, oh, well, what did I gain from all of this? And how am I different and better because of it? And so in that circle, as you're going around, what are the experiences that are going to put you in the best position, not just to have, like a stable life financially, but to have been using your time in a worthwhile fashion for your own like personal development.
And so, do you think that right now our our society or the way we kind of trained is more so hindering us from doing that? Or do you think it's more so of a, I guess, a choice that kind of like the red pill and then and the blue pill. Do you think it's more so of a choice that people choose to, not think about it, or it's more so of a subconscious societal underlying thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that there are elements of both. I think there's a societal structure that is definitely like sort of herding people toward one way of thinking about jobs and careers. And there's one narrative that's predominant. Like I know when I was younger, I don't know, we're a good many years behind or apart from each other. I don't know about you and your folks, but when I was younger, my parents were like, you gotta go to school and you gotta do well in school so that you can get the best like grades, so that you can get the best job, so that you can make the most money. And I feel like all of my friends from different socioeconomic like levels, they all heard the same thing from their parents. And once again, it's not that this is bad advice, but it's not one size fits all advice, and it's not going to work for everybody. So we were all, pursuing the same jobs. Everybody wanted to be a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer or this or that. Until we got older and realized that, like, okay, some of this stuff isn't for us, and there has to be a different pathway. But by that point, you've already invested so much in that pursuit that it can be really scary to turn around and say, like, oh, well, I'm just gonna drop all of this and do something else. Like, we all know people who came to college and wanted to be doctors, and then halfway through college, they're like, this is not actually what I want to do, right? I feel like we could prevent that with a more holistic education about work and fulfillment from early on. And so then the only other piece that I'll say is, even though there's that societal structure, I mean, really that same structure is disenfranchising a lot of people who are in the margins. So whether it be race, ethnicity, gender, like, citizenship status, like there are a bunch of, literal barriers that are preventing people from utilizing work in their favor. And so for those people, even if there is a narrative, I think it's more important to recognize that there are structures that are preventing them from using work in a gainful way to their benefit. And for those people to say, like, oh, we have to get the best job so that we can pull ourselves up, like, I totally understand how that comes about. And, achieving equity for those people is a totally different conversation. But there are a good amount of people who can't afford to think about career in another way than the predominant way, unfortunately.
It's too costly to try and even think about altering your pathway. Yeah, no, I can definitely my yeah, I grew up, being told the same thing. But I think mine was, I don't know if yours was too, but mine was more so kind of rose gold, like in the sense where I was taught, all right, don't bring anything but A's home, nothing but A's. I don't want to see any B's, I put a roof over your head, I pay the bills, I want nothing but a good job, go to school, which is completely cool, And but as you get older, they're like, make sure you go to college, because you graduate college, you get a good job, you'll be good. And especially now, and I just graduated in May, so I just graduated into a pandemic, and it's just really indicative of the idea or the notion that we're taught young that all we need to do is go to school and make good grades and then graduate college, and our degree is like our savior. It's our shield from any might throw at us. And I mean, I know people that really thought that all they had to do was graduate college. So they took the easiest classes. They didn't really apply themselves, put themselves in organizations or opportunities that could push them beyond their limits. They just did the bare minimum. They were taught that all they had to do was get through college. So, why would I put in more work when my goal is to get through college and I'm supposed to be good? And I see that right now really being a big factor for a lot of my friends and the people who are coming up in college right now and later in high school, and they have that mentality. And it's, I don't know, in my mind, it's a little disappointing and dangerous at the same time, because I feel as though we are kind of pushing ourselves and the people we care about onto a path and saying, look, this person did this path, that person did this path, and they look like they're doing great. So this is what you need to do. Don't worry about anything else. Focus on this path and you'll get to where you need to be. Have at it. And it's dangerous.
I love this for a couple of different reasons. Because as much as we'd like to, I mean, you using examples is great, right? Saying like, oh, look at this person and the way that they did things is wonderful. Because in my opinion, the best purpose that it serves is to like inspire other people. You can hear from somebody who's successful and hear their journey and hear little things that they did. And then you like as a person who's maybe not there yet can say, oh, this is really inspiring. I have a new energy about how I want to approach this thing. But like, it's very rare that you will be able to do exactly what somebody else did and have the same outcome. That's just not how life works. And like, I feel that people know that like in at their core, but that's not the narrative when we get to talking about careers, to your point. It's like, hey, look at this. This person did this. You should do this and you'll be fine. But we all know that it's easier said than done in that regard. So I think that, you know, with that comment that you made, we're already seeing the difference between people who are like you, and I can brag on you for a moment, like who entered college not just with, oh, I want to make the most money or get the best job, right? Like obviously I want to have a good level of achievement with what I put my energy into. But you were, I remember you joining organizations not just for what the organization could achieve. You're connecting with people, you're getting experiences, you're practicing this thing or that thing. Like you did so many activities that made you a more well-rounded person. And in the end, you have an outcome for like that part of your life that is indicative of the work that you've already put in. And you put yourself up against somebody else with the degree that you have from the same school or from another school and look at, oh, why is this so different? And it's because of that work. It's because of that work that you did and your perspective that you took. I also think that the conversation between us is a really interesting one because as you're a pandemic graduate, so to speak, right? You had this whole narrative your whole life of like, hey, just get your college degree and then you're going to be fine. And then the year you get your college degree, the whole like United States economy folds in half. I finished high school right on the edge of the housing market crisis. So I remember that in terms of like people were like, should we even go to college? Like we're gonna what do we do? It's nobody has any money. The recovery for the market wasn't estimated to be just 4 years. So people were like, does it make sense to go to college? Is college a safe haven? Jobs, there's no money. What are people supposed to be doing? And so it's interesting now to be like in a similar time frame, but talking to somebody else who you know, is in this version of it.
I actually was I have I was talking to some people a few days ago, and they were like, well, maybe I should just go to grad school, because they can't find a job right now. You know, they if something happened, like if I was a junior right now or in my senior year right now, I would have that cushion, you know, that cushion of maybe by the time I graduate, things will have opened up for me. And so I was talking to them, and they're like, well, I'm thinking about, you know, going to grad school and just kind of picking up a skill and seeing what I can get because of that. And I'm not to their discredit or anything, but I think that we have to stop thinking that an institution is going to solve our problems. And
Oh, you need another audio effect right there. You need like a like a choir. You just need people singing the praises of that statement because that is it.
And you know, and you can't be that person that's like, bro, that's just that makes no sense, or that's stupid, you know? Like, that's just, I mean, that's rude. You have to bring these things up delicately, because I mean, this ends up being
For
people's
sure.
livelihood, you know? And
Yeah, absolutely.
but I think that is a big part of our society and our culture and how we see education influencing our career and lifestyle. Because I know quite a few tradesmen that, I mean, make bank. They can, you know, plumbers, HVAC people, welding people. I mean, they make money, and they went to trade school. Yeah, they had to get their certifications and things, but they opted out of the, you know, regular liberal arts college education, and they didn't have a whole lot of debt or anything coming out of school, and they're making. I mean, I know a guy, he makes, what is it? He does welding and stuff. I mean, he makes a crazy amount of money just welding. It's a unique skill. It's a trade. It's a trade. And I think for me, we should kind of put a bigger emphasis in the future of kind of returning our kids and the learning in the schools back to how to do things, not just, you know, think like this, which is a whole different episode about teaching someone what to think and how to think. That's totally different. That's a whole different episode. But kind of how we, the images and the ideas that we put in our kids today of how they're supposed to reach their goals is heavily based in institutionalized education. And I think, as we're seeing right now with the pandemic, it doesn't matter how educated you are. If the world hits, then the world hits. It doesn't matter. What do you have that's kind of fulfilling you, which kind of leads me back to, or which kind of leads me back to what you said about, it's not about achieving things, like it's about growing. Like, how are you gaining value? Because we're adding value to the business by doing our job. But what value are we getting
Every day.
that just isn't monetary value? Because we can't if, you know, that doesn't help keep our loved ones loving us. And most of the time it seems like it's taking us away from. So
Wise beyond your years, young man. This is all the great stuff. Now, I totally agree. I totally agree. And especially about the shift in education. I mean, another episode is like just how what a I like to imagine breaking down things from scratch and just starting all over. So a lot of times when you get into discussions with people about how things could change, they get stymied because people will say like, oh, well, that would never happen. Or like, you know, excuse me, like the Congress wouldn't carry a vote for that sort of thing. But there's so many instances in history where there was an outrageous idea that people never thought would happen that came to pass, right? I mean, we don't have to do a whole history lesson, but just think about like the abolition of the institution of slavery. There were people who were saying like, this shouldn't be a thing. And everybody was like, but our whole economy depends on this. This will never change. And then roughly 30, 40 years later, right? Not without supreme cost, but there was a shift. There was a shift, and now, you know, there's not the institution of slavery anymore, you know, in that form that it was in. So I tell people like we should just think about stuff from scratch. And when I think about education from scratch, I think about it in the way that you're describing, right? From a young age, giving young people a lot of choice, giving people a lot of realistic and like a reasonable sense of all the different pathways. And like it's funny because now you're calling them essential workers, right? Like essential jobs that are in your community. Everything that you want or everything that you need is not beyond where you are right now. People get that idea of like, all right, well, whatever I'm doing and whatever's around me, like what I actually need to be doing is somewhere else. It's somewhere else on a campus, it's somewhere else in a library. And, you know, I have to go there and get that thing before I can really unleash my potential, but it's not. Like you said, you can learn to weld in your local town. You have a good apprenticeship and somebody to teach you, and you know, you might be the welder in your town, especially if you're from a small place. And then what does that look like for your life? Like, probably pretty good, pretty consistent work. So I think that an entire like educational reform from the ground up is what we need. And I'm not sure how much of that we will get in our lifetimes, but I certainly have ideas about about what it could look like.
Yeah. So what do you think about, because you mentioned fulfillment, you know, a few times. And So you're saying that work is about fulfillment. And so if the work isn't fulfilling, do you think a shift should be made? Or do you think maybe an alteration towards how you work or where you work? Maybe a question of switching a company towards switching your complete job title completely, maybe industry and everything.
Right. Yeah, another great question. And so I want to just do some grounding in fulfillment for a second before I approach it. I think one of the big ways that we miss when we talk about like career education, which is also personal development. So that's one miss, not conflating those two, but also not distinguishing them so that people understand that they're getting both. One of the other biggest misses is we don't have folks focus enough on the self-work of like exploring their own identity. It's easy to go to any career services office and for them to hand you a packet of materials and say, hey, you know, look at these companies, look at these jobs, look at these things and, you know, make your pick. But like if somebody hasn't had a chance to sit down and think and then have discourse and then think and back and forth with somebody who's going to try to help get them outside of their comfort zone or ask them tough questions, then they likely at a young age, like 17, 18, they likely haven't had the opportunity to explore their own mind and their own heart with regard to what it means for them to be happy and fulfilled. Like when I was that age and you told me, you asked me what I wanted, I would have told you that I wanted to make $1 million one day. Like that is my goal. And then I get into work, I get out of school and get into work and start doing some things. And from a certain point on until now, you ask me what the major goal is of my work. And I will tell you the same answer every time. And it's helping people. And it sounds really simple, but it's always been that thing. Like it's always been whatever I'm working on, I'm feeling the best about it if I know that I'm helping people. And I see the direct impact, even better if I see the direct impact of the people that I'm helping. So I think understanding what fulfillment means for yourself is like the very, very first step. And you need people around you who are going to be able to help foster that understanding within you. To your question, it can be any number of those things. I caution people against like always looking for the next best thing, right? So if you feel unfulfilled or you're not happy, like it's not the end of the world necessarily, as long as it's not having like an extreme toll on your mental and physical health. But obviously it's a situation that you want to grow past. So if you're unfulfilled in whatever you're doing, I think identifying why is the first step, right? Like what about this? Make a list. What do I love about this role? What do I not like about it? And what do I feel is missing? And if you can name those things that are keeping you from feeling unfulfilled, you can analyze those things, right? Like, is this reasonable? Yeah. I'm working here at this sandwich shop, but I'm not fulfilled because I'm not making $1 million. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to probably have to not work at this sandwich shop. That's the first thing. But identifying why you're not fulfilled is an important step. And then from there, I think the next advice that I have for folks is like to always make the most out of the experience that you have. So when I was in marketing and I wasn't fulfilled, it was because of the environment and it was because of the people and my relation to the people that I was working with. Like I actually liked the job, but I didn't like going to work every day. And that was a strange kind of dissonance for me. So when I realized that like, okay, I'm going to have to leave and I need to make a pathway toward that. The other part of that question is, well, on this pathway toward leaving, what do I do until I'm gone? And what do I take with me? What do I prepare to take with me? And that was a lot of marketing skills. It was like, all right, well, I have 8 more months likely, you know, of doing this job. So I'm going to learn as much as I can that's going to benefit me, because when I move to the next thing, I'm still going to have that with me and it's still going to be useful. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that marketing knowledge is stuff that I took and helps me run the businesses that I run now. Like I don't, even with the disappointment of some of the aspects of that job, I couldn't be doing the stuff autonomously that I'm doing now without it. So In short, it could mean any of those things. It could mean a change of title. It could mean a change of company. It could mean a change of department. But the most important thing is to think about why you want the change and how the change is going to benefit you. And then on your way to the change, not to forsake what you're doing in the current moment, like get whatever you can out of it before the transition happens so that you're not shortchanging yourself on how you move to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you, so you know that saying how people always say that, I wouldn't say always, but a lot of people say that when you get out of college, you should just take any job because it's not going to be your perfect job. What do you think about that, or your thoughts on that? Yeah,
I think this is probably some of the most dangerous advice that like you can give a young person. And thankfully, I had really good mentors in my life at the time that I was finishing school who gave me the exact opposite advice.
Mm-hmm.
Your first job, you should have the most scrutiny for the first job that you take. And I mean, as far as you can afford to apply and take your time deciding and analyze and wait, like you should do all of those things, because your first job, whether you know it or not, is going to set the stage for how you understand the workforce and your career for the rest of your life. And so, you know, people think like, oh, well, it's just important to get out and start working. But once again, that's that narrative. That's that conditioning. You need to start somewhere. So just start so that you can be ready, be starting to move forward. But, you know, I know a lot of people who got into first jobs that were in toxic environments, or the organization wasn't at a place where they could invest in the professional development of their people. Or they took a position that, you know, wasn't a challenging enough position. And so then they got bored, or they maybe didn't learn anything. And like, now that is your square one. That is your context for what it's like to work in America. So if you've been in a toxic environment and then you get to a better environment, it's not your fault, but you're probably going to take some habits with you that are not the best habits.
Yeah.
And then that's a process of unlearning. And same with, you know, being in an unchallenging role. You probably develop some habits of what it's like to show up to do work every day that is not difficult for you to do. So what happens when you do get something difficult to do, right? All of these things impact how you're going to be working for the rest of your life, subconsciously or consciously. And your goal should be to have to do the least amount of undoing from your first job on. If you can land in a really solid first job, it may not be all the money, or it may not be the best environment. But either way, if you can land in a balanced first job that's going to give you most of the things that you need, mm-hmm. then your career will inevitably move more smoothly in the steps after that, because you won't be spending so much time struggling against like the bad habits that you picked up from just taking any job the first time out.
Mm. And so I guess that kind of aligns with when you say that your career is a manifestation of you, because starting out, you have the ideas of what you want your life to be like. So rightfully so, you want to kind of start thinking of careers to help you align with that and reach those goals. But if you get in those toxic environments, you become jaded and it kind of warps you instead of you.
Exactly.
Mm. I like that.
Yeah. I talk to people about this with career, but also with resume. You know, our consistent point, even in this conversation, is like there's a set of parameters that are supposed to make things easy for people, right? It's supposed to say, hey, this is a checklist of what you do so that you can be successful, so that people feel like they have some sort of guiding principles. And I understand that. But you have to have enough discernment to know if the principles are supposed to guide somebody like you or not. And so when you're building your career, just like when you're building your resume, you don't say, oh man, well, there's a section for internships on here, but I never had an internship. So I'm going to leave the section on here, but I'll just leave it blank. Like, that doesn't make much sense. Same with career. Oh, well, this job doesn't really do any of the things that I want it to do, but it's going to give me money. So I guess I'll just take it. It's the same logic. Your career is a manifestation of yourself. And if you have done the work to start knowing yourself in what's important to you and what you're good at, then ideally your career looks like landing in the right place. Like, oh man, this is a transition into something that I'm encouraged about, excited to do, have some skills to offer to it, have some room to learn, not the other way around. Not, all right, well, I have a degree and now I'm in this environment where I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to try as hard as I can. Like, there's going to be some learning curve no matter where you learn, no matter where you land, but you should not end up in a space ideally where you feel like you don't know what you can offer. You're just going to be getting a paycheck. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just how I'm thinking about this right now with what you're saying, I would suggest, or I would kind of argue that maybe it's better for young people to start figuring out mm-hmm. what they don't like, because that's actually more important than what they mm-hmm. need. Because if you figure out what you don't like, you don't even have to waste time on anything that is related to it. So whether you're looking at a job application or in that interview, like you actually not even in the interview, because you look at the application and you realize that those are things I don't like. You don't even waste time in that process. And so figuring out what you don't like might be more important than figuring out what you do like. And I guess that kind of,
I think that's,
yeah.
No, I think that's super astute. I think it's perfect. I think it's just as important to your point, if not more important, to figure out. Have you ever seen an episode of TMZ or like read any TMZ articles?
Yeah, I've seen like clips of TMZ.
So when I was a sophomore, I had an internship at TMZ. It was my first internship. I never been to LA before. I like applied on a whim. It was like their first year of having an internship program. I got in and I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I get to do this whole journalism thing, like meet famous people. And, you know, so I was like super excited.
Yeah.
And I went to TMZ, and no shade to TMZ's internship program, because I'm sure it's much better and much different now. This is a long time ago. But at the time, it was not a good internship program. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really robust. They didn't have much for us to do. And there wasn't a lot of like training for us to learn how to be journalists. And it's TMZ, so it's a lot of like undercover sort of guerrilla style stuff, but we didn't even really get a good learning of how to do that stuff. We just all felt like we were there. We were just there passing the summer. And so I came back to Atlanta and I had no idea what I wanted to do with journalism. Like, I've been telling myself and everybody around me my whole like college career, like, oh yeah, I'm going to be a journalist. And then I have an internship. And now I don't have any idea of like what it actually means to be a journalist or mm-hmm. how I want that to look for me. But I could tell you how I didn't want it to look. I could tell you everything about how I didn't want it to look based on my experience there. And that actually led me into some much better journalism experiences in the Atlanta area after that internship, because I could ask people, I could say, oh, well, what is your training program like? How do you help young journalists understand how to do this with like integrity? Or, you know, is there any like mentorship involved? And I got all of those questions, not from having those things in life, but from not having them in an experience. So I agree with you wholeheartedly and encourage people to take account, to make a list of things that they don't like in a work environment.
Yeah. I mean, so with that, though, it still begs the question of when are we supposed to, I mean, figure that out or have enough, mm-hmm. you know, enough experiences, because we're in school from, what is it, like 4 years old, if we're lucky, 4 years old to high school. Yet again, if yeah. we're lucky. And all of that is pretty much generated for us the time of day, the material. So how are we supposed to start getting these experiences? Because if you get a job in school, I mean, that's it's tough. It's super tough to go to school and work. So it how do we get those experiences? He was like
I know this is these are the hard questions. This is the real stuff. Like, and I think that the question differs. I'm already thinking about how this affects different people, right? Because I don't want to be insensitive in how I answer the question. I think there's an easy or there's an easier answer, and then there's like some really tough answers that that some really tough versions of that question that I probably don't have the answer to. So the tough versions I think about are like, what about people who aren't going to college for one? And also, what about people who are growing up in areas where they don't have like a lot of economic development and there aren't a lot of jobs available? So even if you grow up in like a rural part of Arkansas and you want to work and figure out different things, who do you work for and who hires you and how do you figure that stuff out, right? More than likely, statistically, you're going to be working with somebody that you know or like a family friend or maybe a family member. But is that really going to give you
Exposure.
the exposure to things that you're not familiar with enough to make that assessment? So I just want to name that there are a couple versions of this that I would really have to think through more and talk to probably people in that situation about to have a good recommendation. But I do see those people and I understand that it's like not, it's not the same, it's the same struggle, but it's not the same struggle. For people who live in cities or places with more going on, or maybe who are going to college, I once again will refer them to the Donna Williams experience. Like, you have to involve yourself in work or work adjacent things that are going to help you start to understand how people interact with each other. So you're in a business fraternity that not only has like, you know, a cohort of people that you go to school with, but there are other chapters in other places. You do partnerships with like professors, faculty, other staff members. You have a consistent like pathway to engage with different people and to plan and to collaborate and to try to get things done. You didn't get paid for that work, but it was still formative in how you understand what a work environment is. Like, I remember even sitting in the office sometimes, you being frustrated, like, oh, well, the planning for this isn't going how I want it to go. Or, you know, I want the communication to be better here. That's work. You're learning in that moment, you know, and that's what it's supposed to be. For people who maybe aren't financially in a place to take advantage of something like that, there are still plenty of other clubs and groups on campuses and even in communities, if you can find them, that do similar work, collaborative work that has stated goals and has a timeline for how to achieve things. Anything that you can find related to that, is going to be helpful for you. And in Atlanta, and especially right now, like there's a lot of social justice work that's moving. So there's a lot of people who are like organizing protests, but then there's also a lot of people who on the back end are organizing how they get meal trains to folks who've been out of work for 5 months and they need help with figuring out how they're going to eat, right? Like a large scale meal train to feed an entire neighborhood in Atlanta is work. And you have to collaborate with people to do that. And you have a goal and you have very tangible, you know, elements of that process that people have to be accountable for to make it happen. So thinking about work, not as just, you know, I'm going to give these people my tax forms and they're going to cut me a paycheck every 2 weeks. But thinking about work as anything that has a goal that move that involves organizing people and that moves an idea forward. And I think if people would expand their notion of what work is out a little bit, then maybe we could get more creative about how they find those experiences.
Gotcha. No, I really like that. And so we're getting kind of close to time. And so I want to kind of start to close this out with one a question of advice from you to me and to the listeners. So for us that's young right now, I have two questions for you. So us that's young right now, I'm talking like 15 to like 25 is really, I mean, I honestly 15 and 30, because that's like three transition phases going from a teen to a young adult, a young adult to an adult in such a short time span. But with that in mind, how long do you think people or we should stay at our businesses? Because I know this is a big question. It has a lot of viewpoints.
Oh, I love talking about this, but I know we got to close out, so I'm going to keep it short. Statistically, young people in my generation and in your generation, and I don't know if this accounts for people that might be 15. I think they might be in a different bucket at this point. But either way, the precedent is becoming set between our two generations of people staying at jobs on average for about 3 years.
Wow.
So, 3 years, 3 years, like 3 years is actually like a max. It's like a 24, in between 24 and like 36 months is average. So there's a lot of discussion around, oh, well, this is changing. People are just leaving. It didn't used to be like this. You know, we can't trust these younger people because they're not loyal to companies and all of this kind of stuff or whatever. But statistically, you have about 3 years max before most people are transitioning out of their job roles. So I will say, do with that information what you will. Mm-hmm. You don't have to leave the company necessarily. Maybe you're making a lateral move. But I feel that the first year in a job is how you kind of get your bearings. The second year is where you really like start practicing mastery. And if at the 2 year mark, you don't feel like you're ready for more responsibilities or that you're ready to do something different, then the job might not be challenging enough. So I would definitely ascribe to that, like, 2 to 3 year time period as a good time period to be looking at how do I get more fulfillment? How do I get more growth? What can put me in a better situation here?
Okay. And my last question is, what is one piece of advice that you want to leave us with?
Ooh, man. For a time like this, there are like so many things. Okay. So what I would say in this very moment is that young people are they're facing like a part in history that we've never faced before. So the first thing that I want to say is just like to be very kind to yourself and to be very patient with yourself during this time, because you're navigating things that, as wise as older generations are and as much as they've like helped us build this pathway, they haven't done anything like this. And there are no like for sure right answers in this moment. So as best as you can, don't beat yourself up about, you know, this year and maybe the year to come about how your work looks, how your life looks. Just be really gentle with yourself, but also, you know, try to stay balanced. I would not amend that, but I would add on to that by saying another unprecedented part of this year, as we're seeing institutions break down, it's like my evil hand rub and evil laugh, is that the access to information is even greater than it's been in the past. So JSTOR, the research database, is free all year. We only have a little bit of the year left, but like you can access hundreds of thousands of peer-reviewed articles for free all year. There's Ivy League courses that are free for the rest of the year. There's so many institutions that said, like, we don't really know what to do, but we also feel like this would probably be most helpful. So we're just going to give this to people. And I think we would all be remiss not to try to pick up one additional thing if we have the space and we have the time for it, to just try to pick up something that you've always been interested in learning. Find a free source for it and just read it a little bit, you know, practice it a little bit. The information is there and it's becoming more accessible. And so I would say, in addition to just taking life slow, being kind to yourself, take this opportunity to learn something for free that people may have in the past tried to create a barrier for you learning.
Wow. No, that is amazing advice. Yeah. Okay. Well, that is all for today. A big thank you to Hugh Hunter for being on the show. I always appreciate your insight, man. I really do. And just thank you for taking out the time to do this and have this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Oh, always got time for you, always. And I appreciate you sharing your platform and your space with me. And I'll be excited to hear how it lands with listeners. And I hope that they will find it useful. So thank you for allowing me to say something.
No problem, no problem. And to everyone else, please be sure to subscribe to the Life V Lifestyle podcast wherever you listen to your podcast so you can get immediate alerts when new episodes are released. Also, please be sure to leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. If you have any topic ideas about kind of what you would like to hear, just hit me up on Twitter at LifeV Lifestyle. As always, I wish you much success in your Life V Lifestyle journey. Till next time.